Hello and welcome to the All About Symbian Insight number 161. We're here to bring you all the news, the views and information on the Symbian and Nokia ecosystems. I'm Rafe Blanford and joining me on this podcast in Reading is...
Steve Litchfield, fresh from my a voice check on the Gadget Show Web TV. Go check it out. They're a view of the Q2 Internet Radio featuring this very podcast. We're stars.
Excellent. Fame at last. And up in Edinburgh we have...
The man who's currently getting ready to produce 6 weeks' worth of radio for Australian Eurovision fans, Ewan Spence. See? Yeah. Already a star.
Yes, Ewan is our Eurovision expert. No doubt he'll find a way to claw Eurovision onto the All About Symbian site in some form or another in the next few months, and we can all look forward to that.
Also, way that I can.
Absolutely. Also joining us up in Hull is...
David Gilson. Hello, everybody. I'm just recovering from a busy week of reviewing lots of Symbian applications.
Yes, David, who, while being the most recent addition to the All About Symbian team, I think it now is upwards of 200 article contributions from David, so he's well and truly established himself now. So a big thank you to David. And as a thank you, I think we'll get David to lead out the first news item that we're going to talk about on the podcast today. Now, we've seen Symbian move to open source, and we've then seen the Symbian Foundation close down and Nokia starting to make the source code available. But David, there's been some discussion around this. Can you talk us through this? We mentioned it last week, but we've now got some more details on the licensing. So take it away.
Yes, what Nokia have said, they put a little article on symbian.nokia.com with the heading of "Not open source, but open for business," which has got the backup of some people who are very much in the open source world, because they're saying they're stripping the meaning out of the word open. But basically what they're saying, they had a statement which some excerpts from, which I'll just give a quick quote of. It says, "As we have consistently said, Nokia is making the Symbian platform available under an alternative, open and direct model to enable us to continue working with the remaining Japanese OEMs and relatively small community of platform development collaborators we are already working with. Consistent with this, the Nokia Symbian license is an alternative license which provides an access to Nokia's additional Symbian development for parties which collaborate with Nokia in the Symbian platform." And I won't carry on there, although basically what they're saying is anyone who wants to collaborate with Nokia still can do. However, it's going to be a very exclusive and approved group of people. The source code is no longer open to the public and anyone who just wants to download a copy and tinker around with it. So in that sense, Symbian is open no longer. However, Nokia still like to collaborate with people where it makes business sense. Rafe, I'll hand over back to you. Do you have any comments on this?
Yeah, now clearly this has caused quite a bit of consternation amongst some of the open source community. I think there was a good piece on Groklaw talking about some of the implications of this. So what we need to remember is before that Symbian was made available under an open source EPL license. Now, that code is actually still available. There's several dumps of it on the internet, and if people wanted to use that, they're still free to. It hasn't suddenly moved out of open source or anything like that. But this, as the copyright holder, Nokia is entitled to then make the code available under another license. And indeed, further developments of Symbian that will be happening, maybe not on the big scale given the Nokia's stated strategy change, but there will be some happening, will be sort of made available to the collaborators and some of the Japanese OEMs under this license. And it probably reflects the commercial reality of the situation. So I think for consumers and for most developers, this shouldn't really have a major impact and isn't really a big concern. There is maybe a concern for open source advocates, which I'll come back to. But it does also reflect the way things were happening within the sort of contributions to Symbian. We said in the last podcast there were probably no more than 20 or so contributions, and many of those were coming from the same company. So the group of people truly contributing and making a significant contribution, I think, were very small indeed. And using that number of 20 is quite generous in the way that contributions are termed. And so that's obviously going to continue, and Nokia wanted to do this. But I think there's a couple of interesting things, the reasons they've gone for this, is actually it lets them close things down a little bit, and it allows them to, from a commercial point of view, extract the maximum value with Symbian without having too many headaches. One of the notable provisions under this license is that you're not allowed to backwards engineer things. So this would stop some of Symbian's competitors coming along and saying, oh, you know, there's some great IP stuff in this code, or there's some great ideas, we want to backwards engineer that and put it into our own platforms. And particularly with some of the things they might add, you know, in the relatively near future, that could be an issue. So I did mention there are some current concerns with regard to the open source, and this is really from people who are maybe looking at using Symbian as a research and development platform, or for maybe doing some prototyping. This isn't something that Nokia would do. This is mainly maybe talking about universities or students looking at this, particularly with regard to sort of embedded systems. And there was a suggestion that Symbios would encourage this sort of thing, and really to have Symbian's alternative to Android, which I think is what will probably become the sort of mobile embedded system of choice for these kind of R&D projects. So I think that does go away, but I think perhaps it's not unfair to suggest that Symbian was already going to be a bit of a lean choice in that regard, given some of the complexities involved and, of course, you know, the way it's being used elsewhere and being shut down. Nonetheless, obviously, it is a change that the Symbian is no longer open source in the way that people have previously thought of it in the last 2 years. But I think the real impact of this is pretty minimal. As I say, the source code is still available for those who want it through EPL in a couple of locations. And in terms of having Nokia get others contribute where practical in the next 2 years, while Symbian is still, you know, alive in terms of development terms, this license obviously allows that and is more workable from a commercial point of view for Nokia. As I say, for those who very much have an open source philosophy, this isn't good news, but I have to say, my personal opinion on this is that it's not really a major concern, given that those who need access to the source will still have it available in terms of benefits to end consumers. However, you know, we'd love to hear your opinion on this, so, you know, do add something in the comment threads or email us directly.
It's also interesting to see that Google's Android is having the same sort of, how should we put this, presentation issues with how what open is this version of open, with the latest version that's going out on tablets on Honeycomb, I think it's called. That it's like, it is open source, we're just not letting the source code out just yet, and there's lots of hand-wringing and flag-waving and everything. And I think really this is more a presentation issue than anything. You know, those people that need the code can get it by hook or by crook, or by asking very nicely, or just going to a zip file somewhere in an archive. And really, I think the presentation of, oh, we're the most open, it really is an almost, it's like unzipping trousers and measuring just how open you are between your legs. It's, at the end of the day, it doesn't actually matter to the person using the handset, but it matters to the people who are supporting and promoting the handsets in business. It's a fascinating space of psychology, as well as licenses and, you know, how it's all applied.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. You know, I mean, there has been some news recently with Google looking to maybe tighten up on some of the restrictions. I don't think there's anything particularly unusual there. This was rather inevitable as Android grew. And I think in terms of the source code, at least, the basic bits of Android are going to be more readily available. But people don't realise that when they're releasing commercial products, there's a lot more to it than that. And particularly if you want to start using some of the Google applications or the Google name on your device, then you are going to need agreements with Google, and you won't be able to do things entirely independently. Some of the kind of the branch products, particularly in China, that have come out of Android will still be around and still survive. I think that's an important distinction to draw. But it does seem as if the idea of open source in mobile, from the point of view of the traditional open source view, that has you know, it's as much a philosophy in the way you're doing the development and then providing something to the end user, hasn't really succeeded. And perhaps it's not altogether surprising given the complex commercial realities of the mobile world. Now, there's still Migo out there as a very much an open source led project, and with that kind of ethos very much at the heart of the whole project. But we've yet to see how that's going to work in the commercial world. And Android, you know, obviously that's caught up with them, and I think the same thing really has happened for Symbian. And there's a certain amount of rationality that has to be looked at here. Is, you know, does this really matter? And the answer is, if you're an end consumer, not a bit at all. Doesn't matter if you're a developer, no, probably not, because you can still get hold of the source code, and that's useful if you're trying to work around a bug in the platform or looking at how something is done. If you're looking to, you know, make a device or do something in a research and development way, yes, there's a possible issue here. But as I say, some of the source code is still available, and these issues are relatively complex. But my overall attitude to this is really, it's not going to have a great impact on any sort of the commercial side of things. So I think we've done that technical topic a little bit there. So I want to move on to something a little bit different. You know, we've talked many times in the past about how much we like the camera on the Nokia N8. But Steve, there's been a couple of things that have caught our eyes recently in terms of, you know, really pushing the boundaries with the camera and some great results. So I know you've got one to talk about to start us off.
Yes, James Berland, a good friend of the show, a big iPhone fan, but also a big Nokia smartphone fan, especially in terms of their phone cameras. He started up various Flickr user groups to do with the different devices, so themed around the N95, the N82, and now the N8, of course, which he loves. The Nokia N8 user group, and I'll give the URL here because it's worth people checking this out. It's not a long URL. Flickr, that's flickr.com/groups/ Nokia N8, all one word, N-O-K-I-A-N-8 slash. So go there, and there are literally thousands and thousands of really good N8 photos here. These are people who are passionate about the N8 and its camera and are determined to show what it can do and why it's the best camera phone in the world. So do have a look around that group. There's some fabulous photographs. James has been collating the best of these photos monthly. The February ones were stunning. The March 2011 awards weren't quite as good overall in terms of consistency, but the winner, which was this praying mantis photograph of a grasshopper, which we put up on the site in the news story, which Rafe will link to in the show notes, a stunning photograph. Now, admittedly, the person who took the shot of this grasshopper does say that he just touched it up a little bit in Photoshop to basically put a bit of a vignette effect just to highlight the central insect. But even so, to show that photograph to anybody in the wider photography world and say this was taken on a camera phone, they just would not believe you. So as ever, highly recommended to look around the group, highly recommended to stay tuned to James's Nokia Creative N8 Photo Awards, which come out every month, and I believe the winner each month actually gets their photo blown up to billboard size by Nokia and a device or something or other. Nokia are basically taking an interest in the sheer quality and quantity of these N8 photographs and are sponsoring the awards. So do get involved if you own a Nokia N8. Have a look at the Nokia Creative N8 Photo Awards and submit your own, and maybe you'll win, and maybe you'll see your photograph up on a big billboard somewhere.
Thanks, Steve. Yes, great photos there. Talking of great photos taken with the N8, one of the things I just wanted to feature on the podcast, we've been trying to squeeze this in for a few weeks, is the aerial photographs taken using just the N8 by Jason Hawkes. He's a well-known aerial photographer, and he, thanks to Nokia, has been flying around the UK in a helicopter looking at various famous UK landmarks in the air, as well as just other nice photos. And the results of those have been published both on Nokia UK's Facebook page as well as Flickr, and we've been putting and featuring some of them on the website as well. Really some stunning examples of what you can achieve with a camera phone. It's really difficult to sort of look at those and go, this is taken just using a camera, and how far we've come in a few years. I think it really demonstrates the capability of the N8 in a very good way. I think a lot of the time the N8, when you're taking photos with it, you don't really appreciate just how good it is till you put it into trying conditions. Aerial photography is pretty difficult because there's obviously the stability issues when you're taking it from a moving helicopter, but also getting the lighting and the detail level right, and particularly colour reproduction on that kind of scale when you're looking downwards is a very big area. Anyone who's done landscape photography will be familiar with that kind of issue. But yeah, some really stunning examples. Steve, I know you had a quick look at those photos. Was there anything that popped out particularly as a favourite for you?
I was struck, in, as you say, that they are stunning. Now, I wanted to point out there that they are definitely distinguishable from photographs you would take with a standalone, you know, professional camera, because ultimately, although 12 megapixels sounds a lot, you're still trying to capture at that resolution with a tiny lens, a relatively tiny lens, in a moving, vibrating helicopter. And if you zoom in quite closely, you can see artifacts, you can see blurring, but I'm being very, very picky. I would just recommend people to go and look at the whole set. Taken at screen resolution on your desktop monitor, full screen, they look stunning. It's only if you wanted to actually use them for coffee table books, if you actually wanted to blow them up to poster size, that you'd start seeing defects. But the very fact that Nokia took on this project is proof enough itself for their faith in the device. And if you tried to do this with any other camera phone, any other smartphone out there, you'd get complete rubbish for results. So, again, credit to the N8.
Yeah, but I think that's absolutely right. I mean, comparing the N8 to a DSLR really is quite unfair, but I think you'd be hard pushed to achieve the kind of results you're seeing on the N8 with some of the cheaper sort of happy snap or cheap digital cameras, which really goes to show the prowess of the N8. And as I say, it's some really nice pictures also for those of you who are into aerial photography. It's sort of slightly different to the usual sample images you see from a camera phone, so well worth checking out. Yeah. Staying with the imaging issue, Steve, I know you've been looking at a couple of review items recently which are related to the camera, not necessarily for the N8. These can be used on other devices as well. I just wanted to get you to give us a quick summary of them, and we'll start with Photo 3D, which is an application which sort of lets you take fake 3D photos, or rather make fake 3D photos, I should say. Can you tell us a bit more about that?
Yes, Photo 3D sounds like it's going to need a pair of these red and green stereoscopic glasses. And in fact, having downloaded it, I thought, well, I can't review this because I don't have the glasses. And I've been rummaging through drawers and the backs of sofas trying to find glasses from my family's last trip to the 3D cinema, and completely failed. And then I started the program and realized it doesn't use the red and green stereoscopic method whatsoever. Basically, it's a way of fooling the eye by taking, if you like, patches of your image which are tagged by you as being in the foreground or the middle foreground or the background or the far distant background, and it then literally displaces those parts of the image in time and in tune with the accelerometer on your phone. So you have an image which you go in and you manually paint on which bits of foreground, which bits of background, as you tilt the phone in front of your own eyes. And this effect can be seen in video, which is why I included a video clip as part of the review. As you tilt the phone, it displaces those appropriate sections of your image by an appropriate number of pixels, left, right, up and down. So effectively, you can kind of see around corners just a tiny bit. You can see around objects just a tiny bit. And it gives very much a 3D effect. Now, as I said in the review, photo purists will be horrified by this because you're effectively completely mangling your starting image. It's completely false 3D, but it is a nice novelty effect. It does take a while to paint on these this depth editor to paint on the different information, and it's hard to do exactly because you can't zoom in. But I did notice that the developer of Photo 3D was very fast to comment on the story and to come in and say there's a new version in production and he's fixed several of the things I complained about. So I have said I will come back to Photo 3D in a month or so, and there'll be a re-review, and hopefully it'll be slightly more accurate in the way you can depth tag things, and the results will be even more impressive. As I say, it's a novelty, but well, good way of whiling away a boring train journey, I think.
Talking of other review items related to camera, Steve, I know you've been looking at one, Jelly Lens. That's a rather fascinating sounding name. Can you tell us more about that?
Well, as it sounds, the lens isn't actually jelly, which is rather misleading. The jelly bit refers to the surrounding to the lens. It's a small orange and plastic accessory. Think of it as a small magnifying glass with some very sticky goo around the circumference to stick the aforementioned magnifying glass to the back of your smartphone's camera. Now, the idea is that for the devices which don't have autofocus, which can't normally photograph flowers and plant pots and cats and things you might want to get quite close to, you attach this little gooey jelly-mounted magnifying glass to the back of your phone camera, and you then snap away, and it reduces the focus depth from whatever it is normally 20 meters right down to about 10 centimeters, which is interesting. And in the review of Jelly Lens, I did put up my best photograph taken with the device, and it was quite a nice little photograph, some tiny flowers taken at about around 10 centimeters. It's really quite nice. This is on the Nokia E7, which normally can't photograph anything closer than about 40, 50 centimeters. So in that sense, it works. In every other sense possible known to man, it doesn't. The jelly is not strong enough, the stickiness is not, it's tacky enough, it falls off, the depth of field is so small you have to get the distance exactly right or you just get blurred results. As every time the jelly lens falls off, it falls onto the ground, it picks up more dust and dirt, which makes it less tacky, less sticky, and so forth. So it's a bit of a disaster, really. Having said that, it's only £2, which is about €3 or about $4, so it's worth it for the pint of a pint of beer to have it in your pocket and just play around with, especially if you've got one of these EDOF cameras. David, you had one of these as well, didn't you?
Yes, I bought one earlier this year, and I'd just like to back up everything you've said. It was a real disappointment. I think actually you got a better photographic result than I did. Every photo I tried taking with mine on the C7 just came out horribly blurred, and yeah, it dropped off all the time and picked up dust, and mine went straight in the bin.
Yeah, so I think very much a novelty item there. I mean, I think this debate on the EDOF cameras is going to run and run for a bit, but I'll probably maintain what I said originally. For the majority of people, the EDOF camera is good enough and will actually probably result in better pictures for everything except the macro shots. And obviously there is a use case for the macro shots, either on, you know, taking sort of smart photos or perhaps on document scanning, although as Steve showed, there are ways around that in his review when he talked about it, I think with regard mainly to the E7.
Can I just say something, Rafe, on the subject of EDOF? It's not just about still photographs, although obviously that's the first thing that comes to mind when you think of a camera and a smartphone. There's one stellar quality about EDOF that people don't realise in most of the reviews, is that it's also active in video mode. And I have taken videos with the Nokia E7 that have been stunningly crisp and clear. And it gets everything in effective focus in video mode from about 30 centimetres through to infinity without even thinking about it. Now, the N8 has something like 60 centimetres to infinity, which is good enough. But you may have seen my comparison on the site of the video between the E7 and N8. And an awful lot of people emailed me and said, but Steve, that E7 video is much better than your N8. Do you not know how to use an N8? Was there something wrong with yours? No, it's simply that the EDOF has this artificial software sharpening, this software, or it's kind of a faux focus, it's a false focus, but it gives very, very crisp results. And to the naked eye, the video that produces by the C7, the C601, and the E7 is just stunning, and it's all a full 720p. So before people knock EDOF, they should note that it has a tremendous positive effect in video mode.
Yeah, no, I think that's absolutely right, and it's often overlooked. I would also say the EDOF cameras are just easier to use because you don't have to worry about the two-stage autofocus. And for a lot of people, when you're just picking up and grabbing a snapshot, for the majority of things, which, you know, most of the time you are taking pictures of things over a meter away, that's more than good enough. And I think it's also worth pointing out that a lot of people tend to refer to the EDOF lenses as fixed focus, which does them a terrible disservice because the focusing that we talked about there, the extended depth of field, makes a much bigger difference than if you've just got a fixed focus camera.
Yeah.
And so I think, as I've said before, in a lot of cases, I think the use of EDOF lenses is really quite defensible. And it tends to be the people who are a bit pickier about their phones who want to take, as I say, macro shots. And I do agree that's a constituent out there who wants to do that. But relatively speaking, that I think is still a minority interest on the whole. But let's move on to another section of this podcast. Let's take another theme. We've been doing photos. Now let's have a look at some social stuff and social networking. Ewan, I know you've been looking at Socially, which is an application which looks to essentially provide better integration of social networking and the information that comes from that into your phone. What's your opinion of this, and does it work?
It does work. It's kind of a Swiss at the moment, because what it does is it lays on top of your phone. Let's take one example, the caller ID screen. The idea is it's when somebody calls you, Socially, which has to be left running in the background, will go and get the last thing that they posted on your social networks, be it Facebook, Twitter, Foursquare, or whatever, and pop it up on the caller ID screen. Now, it does this by overlaying the information on top of the screen. It doesn't integrate into the screen itself. It's like two layers of plastic, very close to each other. And so every time it's like, oh, we do social alerts. When you get a message coming in, we'll tell you on your home screen. But it does that again by overlaying. Now, there's a lot of hooks that you can use inside Symbian to actually interface with the messaging, with the alert system and such like. Socially doesn't use that. Essentially, it's creating its own tiny layer on top of that. Now, that makes it much easier to get the application out there and to see it going. And for the first couple of times you're using it, it's wonderful. But it actually does start to show, as you use it, that it's not interfacing with the phone. It's just, it's there and it's holding up signs. That aside, Socially is actually a really good idea. It's sort of the next step up from Nokia Social Networks. It does more than Nokia Social Networks. It does it slightly faster as well, gets more information on the screen. If you're the sort of person that is using social networks, but the social network application by Nokia that comes as standard on the Symbian 3 devices just isn't quite cutting it for you, Socially is probably the next thing to look at. It does the integration, it pulls in all the information, and it does have some sync into the phone. Your calendar or Facebook events can be synced to the calendar in your handset. And if you want to, you can do it all or nothing. Put all the thumbnails of people's faces in your address book to match up with those that they supply on Facebook. But it kind of just falls a little bit short for me. It looks good, but not good enough. For example, it does two buttons, soft keys at the bottom, that look a bit like Symbian buttons, but it misses the one that you have in Symbian 3 in landscape mode, which has the time and also the sort of connection status and other icons. It needs another pass or two, to be honest, to make it really look and feel Symbian, and it needs a bit more code to hook it into the system. At the moment, it's probably a 75-80% there. It does the job quite nicely, but if this was to go forward, I want to see a lot more from it before I was confident this was really a good place to go.
So, you know, do you think it would be fair to say that the substance is there, but it's not the style? Because what social is really doing is taking social networking information out of the silo, which is how we typically use it, you know, out of kind of an application or a specific place where you go and get it, and trying to overlay it onto the sort of the phone into contacts and wherever else when you get incoming calls, which really is what it should be. I mean, we want this kind of information integrated into all of our sort of interaction with the phone, and we see very few smartphones that actually do that accurately. Most of the time it's a Facebook application, a Twitter application, and really the reality is that kind of information you want immediately available, accessible in a context sensitive way, and I think socially does that pretty effectively. But I guess what you're saying here is that the style of it just jars slightly when you're used to using kind of the native use, look and feel of a Symbian phone.
Yeah, it's the style kind of jars slightly, and the fact that it isn't actually hooking into anything in the phone. It's not hooking into the caller ID screen. It's not hooking into the alert system. It's doing its own thing on top of that. It's faking it, essentially. It's quick and dirty way of coding. You know, if it was a hack day, I'd be going, that's great, that's exactly the way to do it. For a commercial product, even though it's free to download, they're still earning money off you.
Yeah, nonetheless, I think...
It's not that. It's good. It's a really good start, and I would love to see it progress.
Yeah, no, that's good to hear. And I think this is one of the issues, of course, when people are using their phones, some people don't mind that kind of slightly hacky feel or the slightly, you know, jarring sensation. It really depends on what you want. But if you are into the social networking, I've looked at socially myself, and I think it's well worth checking out if you want that level of integration. And certainly, you know, being able to surprise people by sort of seeming to be very informed about what they've been up to on their social network, I think is always quite an impressive party trick. Staying with the social networking side of things, let's take a look at a Twitter client that's just come out. This is called Different Tack, and it really does take rather a different tack in terms of the sort of typical client UI implementation we're used to seeing for Twitter applications. David, I know you've been giving this a try. You know, from the screenshots, it seems like it's something really different. What did you make of this?
Yeah, well, I think it is the most creative user interface I've used, full stop. I think actually you can appraise it in two separate capacities. You talk about the user interface and talk about its functionality as a Twitter client. As a Twitter client, I'd say it's on a par with Nokia Social. It's fairly limited. You can do the basics of browse your timeline, post a tweet, send and receive DMs, do at replies, and do the native style retweets. The old style RT quote isn't supported, and favorites aren't supported. You can't make a favorite or browse favorites. So, yeah, and there's no Twitter lists either. So fairly limited, but it's got the basic functionality there. Now, the user interface, it's very interesting because it's based on a circular control method. The screen is actually split in half. You have one half for content and the other half is this circular user interface paradigm, which is basically a circle split up into triangular slices, and you drag your thumb around. And for example, when you're in the timeline view, all the tweets in your timeline are represented by a triangle with a little circular avatar of who posted it. And whichever slice your thumb is on expands, and the neighbours of it expand as well, and the contents of that particular tweet appear in the other half of the screen. So it's very creative. Yeah, let's say it's very creative. My problem with it as a Twitter client is because normally any Twitter client that you'd use, you have a long list of tweets, and your eye can just scan over a screen full of tweets at a time and then just flick up the screen and just have it scroll up a little bit and read the next batch. With this, you can only read one tweet at a time, so you have to have your thumb constantly dragging around the screen just to scan through all the tweets. This spoiled it for me, really. I mean, and this is a subjective thing. I wasn't too keen on that. I think, really, Different Tack has a great user interface, but in a way, I think it's a user interface looking for an application.
Yeah, no, I think that's a fair comment. I mean, talking about this, I mean, I think it's quite hard to describe in audio. David's done a great job there, but I would encourage people to go and have a look at this. It is a free application. We've also got the link in the show notes so you can see the screenshots to see what we're talking about. There's a good example video available as well. And yes, it's clear, you know, Twitter is an example application for this technology, which I'm sure the authors are going to look to apply elsewhere. But what really did strike me about this was two things, really. One, that it's very much easy to use in a one-handed way. You know, you're just using it with your thumb, and effectively you've got a navigation area and you barely need to look at that, and then you've got the upper area where the sort of tweet information appears. And I actually found myself able to get through a substantial amount of information in a very quick time. I think one of the issues with Twitter applications is the experience very much depends on how many people you're following or how much volume of information you've got. And to a certain extent, the trouble with mobile devices, the limited screen size makes it difficult to get through a large amount of tweets in a quick period. So I think where this UI stands out for me in particular is a way of displaying very dense amounts of information in a relatively easy and quick to access way. You know, you can generally scroll through these much more quickly than you could scroll through a list. And, you know, to a certain extent, you can't read everything as you go, but you can start picking out the bits that are of interest to you because you might recognize the person who's tweeting or something like that. So I actually found it a pretty quick way of very quickly looking back through some of the tweets over a 12-hour period. And it's written in Qt, and it's, you know, very fast in terms of operation, this application. So it definitely impressed me. As David said, I do think this is a UI in search of a solution, but it did put me in mind of Else Mobile, which produced an entire UI based around similar principles, but I don't think quite so elegantly done as this, because there's actually secondary levels of information according to how many bar charts effectively there are on these circular segments, and they're in this particular case indicating retweets. And also it's a much slicker implementation, at least in my experience of having played with the Else Mobile device, which I think we're talking back probably 24 months at MWC in 2010 or perhaps 2009. I'll put a link in the show notes so you can see that. But yes, I mean, I actually quite like seeing these innovative ideas on UI, and the company behind this, I think it's Fluid Dynamics, as a Finnish-based startup, I think will clearly be looking to use this application as kind of an example of what they can do. And I wouldn't be at all surprised if we see this pop up somewhere else. And I think, you know, anything where you're looking to get through very large amounts of information, particularly ones that are divided up into small manageable chunks, this could be quite an effective UI. So thank you. David is just informing me on the back channel it's Fluid Interactions, and we'll put the link to their website in the show notes. So staying with the review theme of this podcast, there's one more we want to mention, and that's SIM FTP. And David, I believe you've been looking at this, and this effectively allows you to turn your phone into an FTP server. Why would you want to do that?
Well, the reason you'd want to do that, because is as technical and as geeky as it sounds, once you have a pre-configured FTP connection set up on other devices, so on your computer or another phone, it's actually a lot simpler to connect to an FTP and browse files and download, transfer files. So I won't go too much into the application. It's written by a guy called Banzal on the Ovistar, and if you want to follow him on Twitter, it's at T-A-L-V, Talv. I mean, it's a great application. It's very simple to set it up. There's a big red button which you press to activate the server. You can only share one drive at a time, which isn't a problem if you've only got a phone with one memory card slot. But I found if I can just set up the FTP server and I have my router giving it the same IP address all the time, I can just save the FTP details on my other phones that have FTP clients and on my laptop, and I can just load up the FTP program, click connect, and grab or send the files that I want. And it's really simple. So it's £1.50 on the Yovi store, SIM FTP, and I heartily recommend it.
Yes, I think it's interesting to note that people are always looking to improve the way they can connect their PC and their phone together. And of course, one of the advantages here is you can do it all without wires. I think we should just mention at this point, Nokia dropped that. Was something that was added to Nokia Beta Labs this week. And this is an application and service combined, which makes it very easy to move things back and forth between your phone. I'm sure, David, you had a look at this one as well, didn't you?
I had a look at it. At the time, it didn't work too well for me, and I worked out why it wasn't working, because you have to be logged into your Ovi account on your phone, and I was logged into the AAS account at the time, so it didn't work too well for me. But what it does in principle is you install a browser plugin for either Firefox or Chrome, and you can send either an image to be a wallpaper, an image as a file, or a URL that will be transferred to your phone and consumed appropriately on the phone. So it makes taking your desktop browsing experience across to your phone just really easy and trivial.
Yeah, and the reason this works so well, and the reason David was having problems with the login that he mentioned there, was this is sort of powered by Nokia Push Notifications, which is sort of an API service that is currently in beta, but is available for developers using their own applications. And so what happens is you drop whatever it is on the desktop, it goes to the push service on the Nokia server, which then sends an alert to your phone, and so it effectively appears instantaneously. And so it's, you know, you don't have to do it via wires or anything like that, or even Bluetooth or wireless. It's happening because there's a push notification sent out to the internet by your computer, and that then pushes a notification down to your phone. And obviously your phone does need to be connected to the push notification service, but as we've mentioned before on the podcast, that's a way of sort of minimizing data transfer as much as possible, and it's a sort of a single internet connection on the phone shared between many different applications. I think Nokia Reader was an application we mentioned, an RSS reader that uses the same notification system. We're just starting to see it appear in some of the third-party application. I do think it's an elegant way of connecting together the two. And of course, you know, for something like a sys file that you find someone other than the Office Store, you can send over the URL and have that installed on your phone, no problem. Or indeed, as David mentions, URLs for web pages or images to turn into wallpaper.
Yeah, can I just say, Rafe, that I find it strangely warming that after February 11th, we had this doom and gloom about the end of the Symbian world as we knew it, and we thought everything's going to fall off a cliff in terms of activity, devices and software. We've seen a more or less non-stop stream of really good applications. Week after week, there's just app after app after app after game to review. It just seems like there's still plenty of momentum and life left in the Symbian world.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think it's great to see this. Now, the cynic inside some people is going to go, oh, well, these were all being developed before February the 11th, and they're just coming out now because people are, you know, finishing off. But I think actually this is more a reflection of the things, the reality that we talked about a bit in previous podcasts, that things are easier to develop than Qt, and so you've got new people coming in and doing things. There's a big established user base of devices out there, and that's going to increase very much so in the next 12 months. But I think probably the biggest thing for me is that the Ovi Store experience, both for developers in terms of getting content in and users getting content out, has improved immeasurably, especially on the Symbian 3 devices. I don't know about everyone else. Well, I guess we can go around the group and get some opinion, but I certainly found myself installing many more applications on my Symbian 3 devices than I did on my earlier devices, because it's a lot easier to quickly experiment with things. Now, we're perhaps not the best sample group, given that we're trying applications to write reviews, but it's also ones that I'm using on a personal basis, not necessarily for All About Symbian as such. But Steve, what's been your experience? Do you find yourself installing more applications now you did that you've got sort of easy access to an app store which has a pretty good user experience?
Absolutely. I mean, there's that factor, and the fact that the Symbian 3 devices aren't so limited in terms of flash memory and RAM. With the early devices like 5800 and the N97, you're always thinking, you know, dare I install this? Will it mess things up? Will I run out of RAM? Will I run out of flash C-disk space? And there are always worries. Now with these Symbian 3 devices, you've got the relative freedom that you can install most things and they won't mess up the rest of your system. They won't mess up your smartphone experience.
What about you, David?
Yes, compared to older Nokia phones, yes, I have been. I'm still not consuming quite as many apps as I do on, say, my Android phone, because there's still some people aren't making the apps for Symbian that they're making for the other mobile platforms, which is quite frustrating, actually. But yes, I am installing more apps. And by the way, with Nokia Drop, if I was logged into the AS account on my C7, I wasn't sending websites that I was looking at to your phone, was I?
Yeah, well, you might well have been, actually, but I didn't have the Nokia Drop application. But it's an interesting use case, actually, there, that you could potentially log into other things and you could have someone send you stuff completely remotely. And I hadn't really thought about that use case, but yeah, it's quite possible. Ewan, what about you? Have you been installing less or more applications since you've been using your C601?
You know, I think it's been about the same, to be honest. Now, part of that is because sitting with firstly the C6 and then the E7, not every single application was available for them, even though they would run. But at the same time, what I found interesting is that it's not us that this is really addressed to. This is more addressed to the people who want applications but need an easy way to do it. Previously, the easiest way to do it was to go to Google and write in the name of the application and you would present it with the installation file. Who knows where from? And that was the big thing. Nowadays, you know that you go to your phone, you put in the name of the application, and you can download it from the Nokia OV store. And that not only allows the developers to get back in touch with you, but it also allows you to pay for the developer as well. I think the big thing about the OV store is it makes it much more sticky for the average user and reduces the chances of them going to a search engine on their desktop to go to all the places in the dark corners that we truthfully know about. It's still disappointing when you see a new application such as TreeMaker be up on all the Wear sites within a matter of hours of it appearing in the OV store. That really upsets me, but hopefully more people are going to be driven to a legitimate source that allows the developer to take part in that feedback process and the monitoring process than we had previously. And that's where I think the strength is going to be.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right there. The fact that Ewan's talking about there, that in one sense, apps have come of age. There's much better public awareness of them. The fact you can go and get them through a single icon on your phone, the user experience is much improved. And incidentally, you know, what we've been talking about here really is, had there been more uptake of application? I think, yes, there has. And it's certainly backed up on the numbers that Nokia released from OVI Store, which suggests that the Symbian 3 devices, that's the N8, the C7, 601, not including the E7 because the data wasn't available for that, there people are downloading 5 or 6 times as many applications for those phones as they were for some of the older S65th edition and S63rd edition phones. And so, you know, although we have had this end of announcement for Symbian on February 11th, we've then had it come back in that Nokia sort of quite clearly said, actually, it's going to be around for 2 years and well beyond that as well. And so a lot of the canny developers are saying, here's an opportunity, we can get our application out there. And of course, there's reinforced the factors of the ease of development in Qt, the sort of growing public awareness, the better user experience in OVI Store, which actually means looking at our own internal tracking, we've seen far more applications released in this sort of year 2011 than we have in the similar time period in 2010. So things are actually pretty healthy. And originally I said I thought, you know, the application ecosystem might be relatively steady as she goes, you know, with the change of strategy being a negative influence, the other things we talked about being positive. But I'm actually going to change that and say I think there's going to be a significant growth in the number of applications available. And yes, it does speak to the health of the ecosystem, and it's great to see. I think we're probably running out of time on this podcast. We have got some more things we want to mention, but I do just want to point out that we mentioned Ewan's C601. He's just written a long-term review of that, so go and check that out on the website. It's well worth a read. You know, Ewan's been using this device, which I don't think gets enough attention. It deserves more. It's kind of the junior member of the Symbian 3 family. Ewan, can you just give us a 30-second summary of what your conclusion was?
It's really, really small. It's almost indestructible. And the fact that it's got a smaller screen makes it the only truly one-handed Symbian 3 phone out there, because your thumb can reach all corners of it. It would be nice if the battery was slightly bigger, but you can still get through an average day, and heavy usage is you can get through. A normal person, I think, is going to get 2 days off this phone. It's a lovely little package, and it's available for about for free up front and £15 a month, certainly around the UK networks. And it is a nice little goer.
So would you recommend this phone to people outside of the sort of maybe the technical audience?
Probably yes, because it is quite fashionable and small. It's very easy in the pocket. It doesn't look like a smartphone, and it's not scary at all in any way. In fact, the fact that it's metallic, it looks like you would expect a phone to look like nowadays. It's touchscreen, yes, but it's nice, it's compact, it just sits in the pocket, it doesn't bulge out and have QWERTY keyboards and massive camera bits hanging off the end of it. But when you ask it to do something, it can do it.
That's great. Thank you, Ewan. Talking of upcoming content, I know we've got a lot of news coming out in the next week or so, but Steve, looking forward, what have you got for us arriving in the next week or two?
I've gone a bit Windows Phone crazy, I have to say. I've got the HTC 7 Mozart, which is the Windows Phone Arena's answer to the N8. It's got the Xenon flash and the high-spec camera, but all with a totally different operating system. So I should be pitching that head-to-head with the N8. You can probably guess who's going to win. I have to say that the HTC's build quality and component quality is legendarily not very good, but it's still going to be a very interesting comparison.
Is Apollo Creed going to win?
Yes, Ewan. You just keep talking about that in the corner. Yes,
Rocky.
Okay, yeah, no, we'll look forward to seeing that, Steve. I think Steve will be concentrating more on the results of the camera and some of the hardware quality. Though, of course, we will be talking about Windows Phone more in the future as the big switch comes up later in the year. But for now, I think that's all the time we've got for on this particular version of the All About Symbian Insight podcast. I'd like to say thank you very much for listening. You can follow the podcast on www.allaboutsymbian.com. You can follow us on Twitter at AAS. And it really remains for me to thank my co-host, Steve Litchfield.
Goodbye from me, and don't forget to listen to the Phone Show Chat, my rival podcast, on Woo-hoo. Monday.
Yes, check it out. It's well worth a download. It's always an entertaining listener. Steve covers a sort of broader topic than we tend to on the All About Symbian Insight, and for those interested in mobile phones, it's thoroughly recommended. Also, a big thank you to you and Spence.
Indeed, plugging rival podcasts, room404.thepodcastcorner.com, where I take a geek into a huge archive of old technology and ask them which four things they would like to bring back to the modern world.
Ooh.
Yes, check it out. It's sort of some very entertaining things being put into Room 404 there. But also a big thank you to David Gilson.
Thanks for listening, everyone. And if we're doing plugs, I'll just people go to my blog at davidgilson.co.uk and listen into the All About Mego podcast as well.
Yes, so some plugs all around there. It's all good stuff. Go and check out what we get up to when we're not writing on All About Symbian. And hopefully I should have something to plug, which is mobile related and podcast related in the near future. So watch this space. But for now, thanks very much for listening. And we look forward to hearing your comments, your feedback. Do that on All About Symbian, Twitter or email. But for now, it's goodbye from me as well.